Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Graham and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Graham.
For those that care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference in me. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum. Thank you, and remember the person next to you might be listening. It's a tough crowd tonight. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. And I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So, welcome everybody. Chaz has come all the way down from Richmond tonight and he's going to share his experience, strength and hope with us. As you know, the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. And as a group, we recognise the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening we're going to finish off steps 8 and 9. And last week we kind of did the first set of amends about the resentment and the fear. And that was really going to people that we'd hated and making direct amends to them. And also making arrangements to pay back the money. So this week we're going to talk more about relationship amends and living amends. Anyway, so it's step 8 and particularly step 9. So I'll just kick off by reading the first paragraph that we're going to discuss tonight. And it's on page 80. And it's the paragraph that starts, "The chances are." The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we're mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he's having a secret and exciting affair with a girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand. But what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who's literally gone through hell for him. Ryan?
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Ryan.
When I got to AA, I sort of had domestic troubles. My domestic troubles were ending, though. Yeah, and what's funny about all that is for the longest time I thought I was the loyal and courageous girl who had literally gone through hell to support him. I had married like this military guy, and I like left all my family and my friends and my job to like go be with him, and he needed to support me and be there for me. And the funny thing is the last like year or so that I drank, I was kind of pretty oblivious to how my behavior was affecting him. I was very wrapped up in how I was feeling or not drinking or, you know, all the pain that I was suffering from, that I just completely was not there for him at all. I was not a person who cheated. I was not even a person who like disappeared for days at a time. You got to like sit around in like this horrible like silence with me, because I wasn't exactly like Miss Chatty Pants or anything, you know. It was basically a really long time of ignoring the giant elephant in the room. And there was a time when I was so mad at him because he like never tried to talk to me or work things out. And what I realized is that I would like refuse to talk about my alcoholism or how I was drinking. Like, that was my big secret. I would do absolutely everything I could to not talk about it. There was a couple of times I remember him trying to talk to me about it, and I would just shut down. I was definitely the uncommunicative one. Man, that's a big word. You know, and later on I had an opportunity to talk to him, and what he said is that he would be driving home every day with like a knot in his stomach because he didn't know what he was going to find when he got home. I don't know, I've kind of discovered that a lot of times the people that leave my life, it's not because they don't love me or they don't care about me, it's just as they can't stand it anymore. I've made life such a living hell for them that they have no choice but to leave. Like, that's the only option I've left you at this point. Because so many promises have been broken and so many lies. That was my big thing. I love to lie. So, those domestic troubles, they were kind of gone when I got to AA. That's it.
Charles?
Ryan, you hit a lot of things that I have some of the same experiences. When I got sober, I was not married. I was actually in college. So this whole paragraph right here really didn't mean a whole lot to me when I came in, but the one thing that did stick with me is they really want to hear me.
Yeah.
is the part is after a few years with an alcoholic, wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, I couldn't keep a relationship long enough to have be mixed up with other women in a fashion I would not like to be. I mean, the relationship never lasted that long, so I never had that possibility. But I always wore every girlfriend out. They were all resentful, and they all eventually stopped talking to me at some point. And I was the one that produced all of that because I was always out for number one. I was always out for me. Everything I did, all my actions were all rooted in what can I get for me? How can I make myself feel better? If you're not making me feel better, well, I need to go see you over there. And then when I wear you out, I need to go to you over there. And that's just how I operated. It didn't matter what I did to you. It was more of what can you do for me? And when that's over, I need to find someone else that can do for me what I've now worn out of you. And that's how I ran through every single relationship I had, whether it was an intimate relationship or relationship with other family members, you know, my parents and my sister, my aunts and uncles. You know, I still have a grandfather today who's still alive. He's in his 90s. You know, it's those relationships that I just sucked the life out of other people enough where they became worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. I mean, that still happens today if I'm not careful.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to continue now on page 81, and it's the paragraph that starts, whatever the situation. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we've no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take.
Yeah, once again, I can't speak too much about disclosing the intimate details of an affair that I didn't have, but in general, this guidance, in general way, if they know that we've been wild, should we tell in detail? And I can apply that to other areas, particularly my mother. Like, when I sat down and made amends to my mom, it wasn't going to do her any good to hear about the time that I, like, got drunk and, you know, wound up wandering around Virginia Beach and some random dudes picked me up and then they punched me in the face and threw me out the car. Like, she doesn't need to know that stuff. The fact that, you know, I was drinking a lot or the things that she did know about was definitely enough, because that kind of stuff would just further hurt her. So that's all I really have to say about that.
Cheers.
Well, you throw my thunder. I really don't have the experience for admitting my faults and infidelities, but I was just going to say the same thing. Accept when to do so would injure them or others. That's the second half of the ninth step. And there's a concrete example of, you know, I need to focus on me and not allow, you know, another person to take blame where I am to blame. It was not the other person's fault that I would have cheated, or, you know, it's not the my parents would not have gained anything by, you know, real detail and the escapades of what happened with me, and it was more important for me to admit where I was wrong in a general way and make a supreme effort to not make those same mistakes again. I mean, if I'm making the same mistakes again, I haven't made amends for anything. I'm not really trying to live on a different path. I'm essentially the same person, you know, recreating the past again. And, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, that was one thing that I've never regretted my past. I've always tried to use it as a tool to help someone else. But, you know, there is a point where that sharing too much is not helpful anymore. And, it does give a good example of it right there.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to continue now on page 82. And it's the paragraph that starts, "If we have no such complication," on page 82. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He's like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?"
Yeah, I had kind of had my first 10 months in AA, I had what I will call periods of sobriety or periods of not drinking. And the first one was 4 months, and I very much had that attitude of, I'm sober, this is enough. At that point, like, the relationship hadn't completely ended, but he didn't really want to deal with me, and we were living in Texas, and so he had asked me to move to Virginia. And so I'm in Virginia, and I'm staying sober now, and I'm, like, putting my life back together. I'm getting a job and going to school and doing all this crazy stuff, and I can't figure out why he's not, like, eager to run back to me. It was very baffling to me. There were many times, it's like, we briefly went to, like, this therapist, and she's like, you guys need to call, like, this many times a week and talk to each other, yada, yada, yada. And I couldn't figure out why he didn't want to talk to me all the time. And I had completely forgotten that for like the past, I don't know, year or two, I had just been a mess and like embarrassed this guy like over and over and over again. He was in the military and I was the family readiness group leader. So we would have like, we would have these events where like the soldiers and then the people that were participating in that would like get together. And by then I'm drinking pretty frequently, pretty much every day. And he's like asking me like, Ryan, like, please just don't drink on Friday. We have this meeting to go to. Just don't drink then. Okay. And so I, of course, make this promise not to drink that day, which I fully intended to keep until Friday afternoon, at which point I figured I could get away with just a couple of drinks. Unfortunately, a couple of drinks wound up with me, like, intoxicated at this meeting. And we're in the middle of the meeting, and I'm feeling a little tipsy, and they're talking about something, and there's something that I want to say. And in the back of my mind, I know that I need to keep my mouth shut. And I am telling myself over and over and over again to keep my mouth shut. Unfortunately, I was not able to do that. And I just completely bulldozed the meeting, and my own agenda comes out. And a few minutes later, he leans over to me, and he's asking, like, Ryan, have you been drinking today? And I'm like, no, it's just fine, it's fine. And so I drive home, and he's going to be home about half an hour later. And, of course, I have to stop at the store and get a few more drinks. So I buy my little vodka and I go home, and, you know, I'm passed out when he gets home, you know, and that's just like one incident of the horror that like I put this guy through. And I wasn't thinking about that, you know, I was just thinking, hey, look at me, I'm doing good now, come be supportive to me. And my mom, I can see that big, like the patience that mothers have had with me. Yes. Like some people have like these super screwed up moms. I had like this super awesome mom. Like, she was always my go-to person. I have a tendency to, like, completely mess up my life. I've done it several times in the past, and I would always go running back to her. And she would always be there for me. Yes, you can move back in. Oh, you want to go back to school? Here's some money for it. Just over and over again. And I remember those last 10 months that I was drinking, like, she got the benefit to see it. And I'm sure that was a huge, horrible wake-up call for her. Because it had been in Texas, and now she was confronted with the reality of it. I was always telling her that I was going to quit drinking, always, 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 and she was always, always believing me. As a matter of fact, she took off like an entire week of work to help me get through like that first initial like no drinking phase, and I stayed sober with her while she was not at work and babysitting me 24/7, and soon it was over. I was right back to drinking. And she was always the one who got the phone call in the morning. Oh, Ryan, come pick me up from jail. You know, I remember one night I probably had told her that I had gone out to go to an AA meeting, and went and got drunk and wound up in Virginia Beach arrested. And there's no call home to my mom or any of that jazz. And I remember her coming in to pick me up the next day, and she was just like excited and thrilled to see me. You know, because she had been so worried. And I just remember looking at her like, why are you even happy to see me? You know, I've put you through so much. And I just could not figure that out. Gosh, like, I swear, she gained like 30 pounds and got put on antidepressants, and she was still there for me. Even at the end, when she was telling me, Ryan, you need to go, because there's those moments where you kind of like know that this is the time that they're really going to leave. They've really had enough this time. And even then, she was like giving me numbers to Oxford houses because she couldn't bear the thought of me being out there. And was like, Ryan, you got to get out, but here's a little bit of help. So when I got sober, when I got sober for real, I'll tell you, there was an instant switch for me. I don't know, that might have been a God thing or whatever, but it was no longer, oh, look at me, I'm sober now, you need to be here to support me and all this jazz. I was really had a full grasp of the horror that I had put these people through, because everything was about me, especially the drinking. Like, I did not care that it was hurting other people for me to drink. You know, that was not even a blip on the radar. I was just doing anything I could to help alleviate her fear because that's, she was just terrified all the time. I remember, it's embarrassing to admit this because I was like 29 years old when I got sober, but I was like checking in with her all the time, like a little teenager. Like everywhere I went, I was calling her, hey mom, I just got off work. Hey mom, you know, I'm leaving the meeting, just so she wouldn't have to worry about it. and yeah, sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits. Absolutely. I remember, I think when I was fully comprehended, the horror of kind of like how self-centered and dead inside I was. I remember laying in bed one night, and this is really screwed up, thinking to myself, you know, I don't really care if my mother lives or dies today because she's not doing anything to make me feel better, you know, and that kind of stuff. I can't live like that and stay sober, you know. After that, it's very much been, you know, what can I do for them after all that chaos that I put them through.
Thanks. This really kind of, it's, there's a guy in my home group that's been sober for almost close to 20 years. His name is Scott, and he always says, if you want to know how sober I am, you know, just go ask my wife. And you know, it's really easy for me to walk out of an AA meeting and go and treat, you know, the rest of the world the way I think, you know, in a sober fashion. But when I get home, that's kind of where a big part of my character defects happen, because it's such a close-knit part. And you know, just me getting sober, it's the old adage of you get a drunk horse thief sober, you've just got a horse thief. I mean, you really haven't, you've just taken the alcohol away from the person, and the person really hasn't done any work on himself or herself. And that was definitely true for me. I mean, I've been working at the same retail store for a while, and, you know, there's some things you just can't. You can't teach people to, you know, to a personality, but you can teach someone how to do a job. But, you know, if they don't show up for that job, it's a whole different story. But I'm not going to, you know, pat someone on the back just for showing up to their job. My parents never patted me on the back for stopping drinking. I said, well, you're not supposed to drink anyway, you dodo. You just, you know, change your behavior. I mean, my behavior was atrocious when I got sober. I was still rooted completely and utterly in self. And, you know, that evil and corroding thread that ran through my life was fear. I mean, my entire life was run on fear. And just because I stopped drinking didn't mean that stopped. I mean, I had to go through the fourth and fifth step, and then I had to go and face some of the people in that list that I had made and make amends for the wrongs that I had done so that I could go out in society and actually hold my head up. You know, I knew I have done these things, but I have made amends for them. I've tried to make to the best of my ability make these amends. So, you know, I can hold my head up and say that, you know, I may have done these things, but I have done my best to make them right. I can push on. You know, I'm a good person, because when I came in here, I felt like I was bottom of the barrel. I was worthless when I came in here, because there were so many things. I judged myself on the actions I had taken and the way that I had made you feel. And, you know, I did have that certain, well, I'm sober now, everything's supposed to be peachy keen. Well, you know, for the first 9 months I was living at my parents' house, my mom smelled me when I came home. I mean, that should be an indication, number one, that my behavior was more of the objectionable part than the drinking. So, you know, I was just, you know, I lied to her the whole time. I was deceptive. I mean, it just... they never knew when I was telling the truth, and I think that was the most hurtful part, is they couldn't trust me any further than they could throw me. And it took a long time to get that trust back. And, you know, it's much more than just staying sober. It's changing the person that I was when I was drinking to a trustworthy person, you know, someone that can be taken at my word. And the only thing I had when I came in here was my word, and that was it. I had no track history, because I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief when I came in here. I had to spend time building up trust, building up accountability, and building up being truthful. I mean, that was the hard part, and it takes time. And it's the hardest, and it's the most frustrating part of sobriety is time, because it's not on my time. It's on God's time, and that's definitely not on my time. My time is now. My time was yesterday. I want all this stuff yesterday. I don't want to wait for it till tomorrow. And that's, you know, I spent a lot of my beginning sobriety in yesterday and tomorrow, and I was just missing what I was doing today. And you know, the biggest part of that, those first few years of sobriety, is building up those relationships that I crushed, that I killed. I mean, some of them are dead, and I'm, no two ways about it. There are some people out there that I know that I've attempted to make amends to that would rather just never see me again. And that's okay. You know, I've taken those actions. Well, some of them I don't want to see anymore either, but, you know, I've made the attempt to make that amends, and, you know, those relationships are what they are. You know, I've taken care of my side of the street, and that's the important part. And, you know, I can try and take my actions now and build up a trustworthy person, someone that I can actually look in the mirror to and say, you know, you did an okay job today. You didn't lie to anyone. You didn't cheat anyone. And, you know, most days that's good enough. Some days it's not good enough. I'm kind of working on a new fourth and fifth step, so I'm getting to this again, you know. This is a never-ending process. And so, you know, those relationships are everything and everywhere. Okay.
Thank you. Now we're going to go to page 83 with a paragraph that starts, "Yes, there is," on page 83. "Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyse the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticise them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone."
Yeah, as far as sitting down with the family and frankly analyzing the past, I mean, a lot of that was just a recognition of the neglect that I had done and the way I had taken advantage of them. My mom, that was perfectly easy to do. My dad, it was not so easy not to criticize, because, I don't know, I just had dad issues, and he had done some things in the past that I hadn't liked, so that was important for me to remember that this is about what I had done and my contributions. You know, the complaint I always had about my dad was that we were never close. Well, when I sit down and look at it, the reason we weren't close was because I had made little to no effort, you know. He was kind of like my vacation machine or my extra school money machine, and I wasn't too particularly interested in anything else as long as I got that. As far as a long period of construction, gosh, that is like a hard freaking one to swallow sometimes. I look around at like folks that I went to high school and things with, and they're like married with kids and they're living in a house and they have like this job where they've been through several promotions, so they're like making some money, and I was sitting around like living at home with my mom, freshly divorced, making $8.75 an hour, and it was awesome. You know, you know, and it took a lot of work. It was a good year before like I got like a reasonable job where I could actually, you know, like pay my own bills and not live with my mother. So it definitely did not happen overnight. And my behavior is definitely the behavior convincing more than words. I mean, that's huge, because I was very much, you know, always, I'm going to change, I'm going to do this, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And when I got sober, I just kind of stopped all that. You know, there was no more sweet promises. You know, that was kind of out the window. I just started doing stuff and living differently. And my mom eventually, she showed me a text that she had sent her sister where it said, "I think the sun has finally come, the sun is finally out." And it wasn't because I was telling her that I'm going to get sober and change my life. It's because I was actually doing it. You know, I was making the effort to show up at meetings or showing up at work or not just appearing at night. I'm sure that was pretty convincing behavior for her. So that's definitely huge. And it's funny, I see a lot of new folks come in and the people that are like telling me that I'm done, like usually they're the ones that go right back out. It's usually the ones that come in and you just see them start like getting a sponsor and, oh, I got a home group and, oh, I'm doing the steps. Those are the ones that get sober. So it's kind of funny. It's like, what is it? Gotta be, put your money where your mouth is. Mm-hmm. Show me, don't tell me, mm-hmm. is what the real deal is. And that business of the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Yeah, it's not enough for me to like come into AA and sit here and talk to you about spiritual things and steps and all that jazz. It's not enough for me to like read the like 10 or 15 books on the latest and greatest spiritual stuff that's out there. I actually have to do this stuff. That patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Great to sit here and talk about in a meeting. Not so hot when I've got like this super nasty boss that likes to point out my flaws and play the blame game with me. You know, I don't know, spiritual and fitness. Yeah, it's very difficult to keep my mouth shut and continue to be decent and respectful to her. You know, it's real easy to talk about honesty and doing the right thing here in a meeting, but when I've had 2 accidents in 3 days and both of them are my fault and I'm worried about my insurance rate going higher, it's very difficult to actually take the time and go find the person whose car I've hit and tell them what I've done and suffer the consequences of that. But if I want to stay sober, I actually have to do those things, you know? So that's what I got about that.
You definitely touched on a lot of things that I've experienced throughout my sobriety. I mean, I think I touched on a little bit on the paragraph beforehand, but, you know, that long period of reconstruction. I mean, it's building over from scratch, starting from nothing. Because I started with 0 relationships with anyone. My parents just said, "Well, you know, this is going to be the last shot. You know, this is it." I had done the last little bit of my drinking out of town, and when I got sober, I was in college. So when I came home, none of my old friends were in town. I had no relationships here. The only one I had was with my parents and my sister, and so basically, I was starting completely over with life. And I mean, you know, I was one of those people that. I was done when I came in, and I didn't say that I was done, but I had a bunch of old-timers that I was kind of hanging around with in a bunch of meetings, and one of them at one point said, looked at me square in the face and said, "Are you done?" And my only answer was, "I prayed to God that I'm done." And that was it. I didn't say yes, no, and I didn't go babble a bunch of nonsense. I just said, "I have prayed to God that I am done." And that was, you know, my only answer. And that is kind of one of the things not the I'm done part, but how someone reacts when I ask them that question, you know, "Are you done?" That's it is kind of a telling sign. But, you know, it's telling me right here that you do exactly what you do with everyone else in the previous sections, you know, the other people outside of family or your immediate family. You know, you sit down and you talk to them frankly. You don't just mutter off, "I'm sorry, I'll never do it again," and let's press on. You sit down and you say, "These are the things." You frankly analyze. "This is where I was wrong." Do the same thing with everyone else. Don't tell them where they went wrong. That's the worst thing you can do. I think they say somewhere else, I can't quote the page, but it's leading with the chin. And they're talking about the bringing up God and talking about spirituality. It was the same kind of thing. Don't lead with the chin. Just don't open yourself up for any more than you've already opened yourself up for, because it is all, you know, it's all my actions is what I'm worried about. And it's, you know, no matter how glaring their defects are, just don't do it. And I think Ryan touched on a little bit, the spiritual life is not a theory. And it's we have to live it in italics. It's not they have to live it. It's not we, the family, have got to live it. It's we alcoholics have got to live it. And it's saying, you know, don't be concerned if your family is or is not living a spiritual life. It doesn't matter. I have to do it. And that's all that I'm worried about. And it's, you know, don't press it on them if they're not really willing to listen to it or willing to do anything about it. Just it's part of who I have to be. It's part of me. I'm not really concerned that they need to be part of, you know, they can be a part of that if they wish. You know, so don't talk incessantly about them. You know, I've had plenty of sponsees that go and talk to their parents or go talk to their wife. You know, you've got to find God. I've found it. Now you I mean, it's right there. You should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. You know, there's something about reading the black lettering on these pages that really, that's good instruction. Do not talk incessantly about them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. I think I talked about it before. Time. Not my time, that's God's time, and that's definitely not my time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. My feet will do the talking that my mouth can't do. My parents listen to, and even now, relationships that I've crushed in sobriety. I've crushed one recently. It's no amount of talking can convince someone that I'm going to do something. It's my feet convincing people that I have done something. And that's really where, you know, that's where that rubber meets the road. Is it's, you know, when my feet are doing the talking, that's where it becomes real.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go continue on page 83 with the next paragraph, which starts, "There may be some wrongs," on page 83. "There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would write them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone."
Yeah, I definitely had some wrongs that I could never fully right. There were several instances where people that I just don't know and that we'll never see again and probably wouldn't recognize if you put them in a lineup, I just treated them like crap. I remember there was this one night I had put my car in a ditch, and the very nice police officer did not arrest me. He called me a taxi and put me in this cab with the intention of me going home. Unfortunately for the taxi cab driver, I wasn't ready to go home, and I convinced him to like let me ride around with him for a while. And so he picked up his first taxi fare, and it was this couple in the back, and I was going through this divorce, and I was a very angry person, and I just looked at this girl, and I like laid into his taxi cab fare. And he was very nice. He dropped me off on the side of the road. I'm never going to be able to fully write that. If for some odd reason I ran into him and I recognized him or he recognized me and was like, hey, I would certainly do it. But I'm not going to sit here and beat myself up and like torture myself with like, I need to go back and find this cab guy. And there's other instances like that. I did have two people that I couldn't see. One of them was because they were overseas. The other one was a person, they just didn't want to talk to me, they definitely didn't want to see me. So I did exactly what it said here. I sent them an honest letter. One of them, I have no idea if it was received or how it was received or any of that jazz. But the other one, the person wrote me a letter back, and they appreciated the sentiment. And there's like no animosity between us now that I'm aware of. The other big thing is this idea of not being servile or scraping. You know, sometimes when I want people to forgive me or to come back into my life, I can go like overboard, like just like whatever you need, and just put myself in these like bad positions, and just overly remorseful is really what it is, and that's not what it's about. It's not about like putting myself, well, I don't even quite know how to put it into words. It is more just an admission of what I can what I've done wrong and what I can do to make it right. So, thank you.
It's been a while since I've thought about the wrongs I can never fully right. I've at least made some sort of effort in most of the amends that I've been required to make. You know, there are some amends that my sponsor says, no, you're not going to ex-girlfriends and things like that, because there's nothing good is going to come from that. Usually only self-seeking motives are behind those. I don't actually think I've written a letter. I've done more of the be willing to make those amends when they come up. And it, I think it, 2 years sober or so, I went back down to the school that I'd been attending, and I wanted to kind of put that life finally to bed, and there were a couple of amends that I wanted to make down there specifically. It was one adult, the father of one of my best friends down there, was probably the only adult that ever called me out on my drinking, and I basically just stepped all over him. And another was the college advisor that I had, and his sole job there was to help me. That's it. He had other people he's helped, but his only job, he was an advisor. That's it. It's like, Chaz, this is the track you need to take, the teachers you need to be, and the class you need. This is what you need to do. And I stepped all over him. And there were some other things I needed to be mentor, and convinced myself that if I saw one of my ex-girlfriends, I might want to say, I'm sorry. But, God works in ways that I would never imagine. And when I went down there, she had transferred, so there was no way of seeing her. I was kind of disappointed that my best friend's father was actually out of town. And I've actually since been back in the last few years to see my friend and have missed his father. And I've still been willing to make an amend. When I can do it. I'm still hopeful that I can do that. If it comes to the point where I know I'm never going to go back down there, I'll write them a letter or something, but it's something that's not, I'm, it's not eating away at me. You know, I'm willing to do it. And most recently, I had a sponsee that I needed to make amend to. Life stuff comes up, and we parted company, and what I would view as not good terms, and it was all on me. It was not on him. And he actually showed up at a meeting one night, and he was the speaker. And I was like, oh, God. Here's a willingness. Thank you for sharing your story. We need to talk. And, you know, I made at least the effort to see if we could get together and talk, and he said, yeah. And it took about a week and a half to get together, because he's busy and I'm busy, and, you know, wife and kids and all that kind of stuff. And we sat down to dinner, and I made that amends. But it took, you know, better part of a year for me to get to him and be willing to make that amend. And when that spot came up, when that opportunity was there, I took it, you know. And that would not have been so, I'd say, this time last year and even a few years before. This last 8 or 9 months or so have been a real change in my life. I've got some life stuff going on, and it's forced me back into some meetings, a lot of meetings. It forced me to find a new sponsor and go back through the steps again. And, it's the same old stuff that worked when I first came in here is the same old stuff that works now. It really is. It's frustrating that you can't get there. Coast. You're either climbing or you're falling, and it's. I'm getting a real good taste of that now. I'm back on the climbing part. Being willing to make an amends when it pops up. You know, to have that off my chest would never have been possible had I not been willing to make an amend when it pops up.
Thank you. And now we're going to read tonight's last paragraph, which is right there on page 83. And it said, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Yeah, I know that. I've heard it many, many times in AA that this is, these promises, this is what drinking did for me. Like when I drank, like all the magical stuff, the new freedom and the new happiness, absolutely, no regret. Yes, intuitively know how to handle situations, absolutely. I had a lot of great ideas while I was drinking. You know, and I certainly would have pursued that for the rest of my life. Unfortunately, drinking became too painful. So then the big question is like, well, how do I live sober and not be like this horribly miserable suicidal person? It says to be painstaking about these amends and obviously the whole steps. And I'll tell you, I wasn't initially painstaking about amends. I made a couple amends when I first started making them when I was, maybe 4 or 5 months sober. And then I just kind of like got distracted by life and all these lovely new thoughts that I was having, and all kinds of crazy stuff. And I didn't worry about them too much. And then I hit about a year sober and I was right back to where I was at the beginning, you know, driving to meetings, thinking about putting my car into a wall, you know, wondering why is AA not working for me? You know, here are all these happy people in the meeting who are so grateful all the time. Yeah, what's there to be grateful about? Thank you very much. And what happened was I got reintroduced to the steps. You know, apparently the steps are always the freaking answer. I became very painstaking about that phase. And what I was told was very simple, is we make all our amends. And I went out and I sought them all out. I didn't skimp or scrip. And I was absolutely amazed before I was halfway through, because all of a sudden I was happy. You know, I was can sit there and tell you about being miserable, and there was no reason. I had a job, I had a place to live, I had food to eat, I had some people that I could call and talk to, you know, still miserable, you know, make those amends before I was halfway through, and I was happy again. I was calling people up, I started to laugh. Like, that was huge for me. You know, I started to laugh again, and I wasn't doing my fake laugh. I have a fake laugh. You know, like, ha-ha, this is supposed to be funny, so I'm going to laugh now so that I fit in. I was, like, laughing until there was, like, tears pouring out of my eyes, and, like, my stomach hurt the next day, and it was absolutely amazing. And I remember when I first got here, they don't read the promises so much anymore, I've noticed, but it seemed like when I first got to AA, they were reading them at like every single freaking meeting. And the one that always hit me was that we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. Because I walked in here with a huge, huge, huge amount of regret. I mean, I cannot tell you, destroyed relationships, you know, opportunities like out the wazoo. Like at one point I was enrolled in George Mason University. I was set up with an apartment in right outside the city, all paid for, like walked away from it without even finishing a semester. Like I had some serious regret when I got here. And just the process of doing this stuff, like, you know, those things, yeah, they suck, and I kind of wish I could, like, undo them all, but those are the things that make me useful to other people, you know? I remember just thinking, like, if I have to go through all this, please just don't let it go to waste. And I think that's where the regret kind of disappears, is when I can put it all to good purpose. Because before it was just meaningless chaos, and today it's not. And I definitely had a big change in my attitude and outlook upon life, and that self-seeking did sleep away. You know, I told you, my whole life, it was all about me. I mean, I just told you my horrible thought about my mother. And the biggest change for me was that started to dissipate, where I could think about other people and participate in life and be useful. Like, that's what AA has really made me. I thought AA was going to make me, like, sober and blissfully happy. What it's really made me is useful to other people. And I never realized what kind of gift that would be. And the funny thing is like, I didn't do all this stuff. This was stuff that just kind of like came to me. I always get this idea in my head that, I don't know, like, I'm going to get this plan of action in place and I'm going to change my life and like magical things are going to happen. And I always mess up my plans. I'm good for a little while. Sometimes I'm even good for like a couple years, but it always goes to chaos. And I had spent a lot of time, you know, trying to be happy, like doing all the things that I thought would make me happy, and it all failed. And yet here I was, just focusing on the steps and not worrying about all that other stuff, and things are working out. Like, how do you explain that? I certainly didn't do that. Like, I'm just, like, talking about stuff and not apologizing to people, but you guys get the idea, you know? And life is kind of falling into place around me. So it was absolutely amazing. And I like it. It says that they will always materialize if we work for them. It doesn't say, like, sometimes. It says these things are always going to happen. And sometimes, you know, depending on the day, I may or may not have that, like, economic insecurity, the fear of it, yeah, that one's one I still comes and goes. I got paranoid about money at the end of the drinking, but, you know, the fear of it, I always know things are going to work out, so that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan. There's a lot in this one paragraph.
Yes.
I think we have enough time. I'm trying to figure out which one I wanted to talk on, since there's really not a whole lot of time left. I guess we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. That's and the part about the regretting the past. I was listening to a CD on the way down here. It's on emotional sobriety. And I'm going to have to listen to it again on the way back, because I need to listen to things a couple times before I get all of them. But reading these pieces here, it's not just, and we talked about it in the very beginning, it's not just quitting drinking. It's about changing our life and trying to remove the fear that runs through every piece of my life. And a lot of these here, the amends part is, when I go out of these rooms and out into the world, I want to be able to hold my head up and look people in the eye, and I can't look you in the eye if I've wronged you, and I know I've wronged you. I just can't do it. And that's part of the fear, one of the fears that was running through my life is you know, the fear of people, that it says down here, you know, that will leave you. Well, it's part of doing that, and it once you remove that fear of seeing those people, that's kind of, you know, you realize that new freedom is there. I didn't realize that I was such a slave to my fears, that everything I did was based on fear. I mean, it's I've been talking about this for the last couple of weeks with a couple of guys that are brothers in sobriety, and I can't comprehend how much even the time of sobriety that I have, that I'm still, God, my life is so full of fear, and I'm going through my forceps again, and I'm seeing some of these things, and I'm not looking forward to some of these people that I'm going to have to go and make amends to. I've already got part of a list, but you know, I know what it feels like to get that freedom and that happiness, and part of it right now is you know, I know facing all those fears, you know, that painstaking part, I don't want to do this. I don't want to go to some of these people and make amends for the things that I've done wrong, especially to one person that I know I'm going to have to make amends to for some of the things that I have done wrong. Not all of them, but some of them. You know, I don't want to do that. But that's where the most happiness and the most freedom comes from, is doing the things I don't want to do. The ones that are the, you know, the ones that I want to go to, or the ones I think are easy, I can get something out of that. But it's the hard ones, the ones that are painful, those are the ones I get the most growth from, the most ones where I get released into the most freedom, the most happiness, and you know, where the most fear is lifted from me. When it's, you know, fear is one of those things I don't know I have it until I can get rid of it. It's one of those it's one of those things that never ceases to amaze me how much, you know, after I've let go of something, I realize how hard I'd actually held on to it. And I can't do that without taking those actions.
Thanks, guys. Okay, that's it. That's the sharing part of the meeting over and done with. I'll thank Ryan and Chaz for sharing the experience in step 9 with us. We're going to pass these three baskets here, and these are the seventh tradition baskets. And the seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the GSO remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. So at this point I'll ask, are there any AA-related announcements? Lydia.
Good evening. My name is Lydia and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Lydia.
On December 19th, the ODU 49th Street Living Sober meeting is hosting a speaker. English is coming to share her experience, strength, and hope. We'll have cake for no reason and a free raffle and plenty of parking. Please join us.
Thank you. Lisa?
My name is
Lisa. Lisa, thank you. Sorry. Six. 2 hours of eating and then a speaker. Yeah. And that's in Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
This Saturday at 6. Okay. So if you're feeling hungry on Saturday at 6, you know where to go. Any other announcements? Hey, Leslie.
Hey, Leslie.
Thanks very much, Leslie. They just go on that table at the front there. And a plug for an event that this home group is hosting in this room. It's called Supper and a Speaker. And it's on Monday, January the 13th, which will be here before you know it. 6 o'clock, potluck eating. And 7 o'clock, an open speaker meeting with Jerry Weaver, who's going to come and talk for us. And the flyers are there. There's a bunch of them on the table. Help yourself. So that's coming up before you know it, January the 13th. Any other announcements? Okay. Simple Actions is our home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety we'd like to welcome you? Hey, Kevin. Hi, Kevin. Welcome. It's good to see you. Literature is available. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. It's on that table. I think there's three big books. So you can have a big one, a medium-sized one, or a little one. It's like the the three little... What's that one with the bears? Anyway, whatever. Right there. So, and there's meeting lists and all that stuff there. What is that called, that story?
Goldilocks
and the Three Bears. Thank you. The Three Little Bears. It's in the story. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor please raise your hand? Thank you. Thanks to all who participated. Chaz drove all the way down from Richmond in that rain, and thanks for doing that. It was really good of you to do that, and thanks Ryan for sharing with us. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the renowned meeting after the meeting, which will be held, as usual, at a Latin American bistro on 22nd Street and Colonial. And what's it called? Plaza del Sol. And they really have a great ambience and a lot of delicious food. So please join us there. And I don't know about you guys, but in early sobriety, going out with this is an open invitation to everybody. Please come. If you're just going home to sit there and be miserable, you may as well come out and be miserable with us. So really, just come, take the chance, come on out. And someone is going to read the last two paragraphs of 164. Evan's got it. His hand was up first.
Hey, my name's Evan. I'm an alcoholic.
He's bigger than me.
Sorry, guys. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand him. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Thanks. And just one more thing. We haven't been mentioning this, and we do have a website. It's simpleactions.net. The address is on that yellow thing on the table. And all the meetings are recorded, and the meetings appear on the website. It'll be there by 10 o'clock tonight. So all the meetings we've ever done are on the website, and you can just go and click on audio, and you can listen to the meetings again if you want to. And it also has all the paragraphs in there that we read at the meeting. So that's the web address. Feel free to go if you want. For those that care to join us, let's form a circle and say the Lord's Prayer. Thank you. That's good, Ryan. Good job. Thanks for doing that. We're getting there. We're at step 9. Our Father,
our Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen. Amen. Thanks. Thanks very much for coming down.